Come out for this study. Our topic, no exception for divorce. Is this true? And if you want to, you can just put your pencils and your paper down. Just relax and listen, because I'm going to give you a little booklet that's got all of my notes in it. In fact, it's going to have a lot more than I'm going to be able to say during my presentation. And immediately after I'm done speaking, we'll pass this out to everyone, and you can use these notes to formulate your questions if you want to. And so don't worry about taking notes if you don't want to. And I would give the booklet to you now, but you'd be busy thumbing all through that and wouldn't pay any attention to me. So we're going to wait till I'm done speaking and then give the booklet to you. To introduce my thoughts, I'd like to ask 8 questions to kind of introduce our thinking. Number 1, when the Pharisees came testing Jesus in Matthew 19, what was the test? Number 2, at what point in Matthew 19 does Jesus answer the question of the Pharisees? Number 3, why do the epistles never mention the acceptive clause? Number 4, the Scripture says, he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her. 1 Corinthians 6:16. Does this mean that a one-night stand with a prostitute means that a man is now married to the prostitute? Is that what that means? Number 5, what does the Scripture mean? Every sin that a man does is outside the body except for fornication. What's that mean? Number 6, was divorce for fornication even possible under the Mosaic law? Number 7, what about Joseph and Mary? Does this case prove the Old Testament allowed divorce for fornication? And number 8, under Mosaic law, is a man with 2 living wives an adulterer? So think about those questions, and if you don't know the answers now, I hope you'll know the answers, and I hope you'll understand why I'm asking those questions. So let's just begin our study then. On November the 17th, last year, the Church of Christ on 12th Street in Moore, Oklahoma, was having a gospel meeting with Brother Malcolm Niffen doing the preaching. And I went to the last service of that meeting, and he preached his sermon on no exception for divorce. And when I say the no exception doctrine, what I mean by that is the idea that divorce is never, under any circumstance, ever allowed, and especially divorce and remarriage. Never is it ever allowed. So he taught that doctrine, and he made a lot of arguments. One of his major arguments that he made was he just started with this passage in Matthew chapter 19 and just went through the chapter. And he read that verse, the Pharisees came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? The first thing Brother Malcolm did is he drew our attention to this word tempting. These Pharisees were up to no good. They were testing Jesus. And supposedly the test is, they're going to watch Jesus like a hawk. And if he says anything that's different from Moses' law or anything contradictory to Moses' law, they're going to pounce on that. And that will give them a cause to arrest Jesus and eventually have him put to death. And so supposedly that's the test, and they're watching him now. And they ask the question, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Now, Brother Malcolm drew our attention to this, is it lawful? And it drew our attention to the fact that is present tense. As a matter of fact, all of these brethren right here who either have written booklets and pamphlets or preach on this subject, they all make this argument. This is what they believe is a strong argument. Is it lawful? In other words, Jesus was not asking, will it be lawful in some future age? Not future tense. The question is present tense. Is it lawful right now under Moses' law that we live under? And supposedly it will be illogical and unscriptural for Jesus to talk about some future law, because they didn't ask about a future law. They want to know, is it lawful right now under Mosaic law? that. So present tense. Now, there's the question, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife forever? And now we're just going to hunt for the answer. So now he's going to read verse 4 and see, is the answer here? And he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, is that the answer to the question? Does that answer the question? Well, no, that's about in the beginning. So no, that doesn't. The answer is not in that verse. So he went to the next verse. Verse number 5. And said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. And he said, is that the answer? Well, no, that's still about the law in the beginning. And this is about the Mosaic law. So no, that does not answer the question. All right? So we'll go to verse number 6. Maybe the answer is in verse number 6. So, wherefore there are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. And he asked, is that the answer to the question? Well, no, that's still about that law in the beginning. So, no, that doesn't answer the question. Well, maybe the answer is in verse number 7. So, he read verse 7. And they say unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? Is that the answer to the question? Well, that's the Pharisees talking, and that's not Jesus answering the question. So no, that doesn't have the answer to the question. Right? So he read verse number 8. He said unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And he asked, is that the answer to the question? Now, in my mind, I fell into the trap because I thought that was the answer. Okay, but he said, no, that's not the answer to the question. Here's what he said. He said, back to the question. We want to know, is it lawful to divorce for every cause? So how many causes did verse 8 say they had? 1? 2? 20? You see, it still does not answer the question. It acknowledges that, yes, Moses does have a law, and yes, Moses did give you the right for divorce. He did it for the hardness of your hearts and so forth. But it wasn't true from the beginning. But still, it does not answer the question, because this is the question. How many causes do we have? And you cannot look at verse 8 and say, oh, that proves how many they had. No, it doesn't. There's no number mentioned there except the fact that Moses gave you a precept. Sounds like one, actually, but it does not say one there. He did it for the hardness of your heart. So verse 8 does not have the answer to the question, because it doesn't say whether you have 1 or 2 or 20 and so forth. Now really, if you paid attention, Brother Malcolm changed the question. The question was, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And that's looking for a yes or a no. What he did is he changed the question. How many causes do we have? And that's looking for a number. A little slight change, but he changed the question on us, and it affects the outcome. So verse number 8 doesn't have the answer to the question. So we come to verse number 9 now. And Brother Malcolm said this, your answer to the question, how many causes is lawful, is verse 9. And I'm saying to you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. All right, there's your answer. The cause of fornication. Can they do it for every cause? No. What cause? Fornication. And so what? There's the end. Verse number 9 is just simply, you see, explaining the answer to the law of Moses. Verse number 9 is not New Testament legislation. It is explaining there's only one cause for divorce under Moses' law, and that's for fornication. Okay? Now, what I want to do is I want to go to the book of Mark, chapter 10. And I want to do with Mark chapter 10, the same thing that Brother Malcolm did with Matthew chapter 19. And I want to see how is that going to work. And just remember, as we go through Mark chapter 10, the answer to the question, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife forever? The answer is, except for fornication, no, you can't. There's the answer. So let's go to Mark chapter 10 and let's look for this answer right here to the question about Moses' law. Okay, so we go to Mark chapter 10, verse 2. The Pharisees came and asked him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife, testing him? There's the question. Let's start looking for the answer. We'll go to verse number 3. He answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? Is that the answer? No. No, that's not the answer to that question, is it? So maybe the answer's in the next verse. Let's go to verse number 4. They said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her. Is that the answer to the question? Well, when we were in Matthew chapter 19, Brother Malcolm said that is not the answer to the question. So we'll just have to keep on now. We'll go to verse number 5. Jesus answered and said to them, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. Is that the answer to the question? Well, when we were in Matthew 19, he said that's not the answer. So we're just going to have to keep on going. Maybe it'll be in verse number 6. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. Is that the answer to the question? Well, when we were in Matthew 19, Brother Malcolm said, no, that doesn't answer the question. Oh, let's go to verse 7. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. Is that the answer to the question? In Matthew 19, Brother Malcolm said, no, that's not the answer. So we're just going to have to go to verse 8. Now, we're running out of verses to find that answer. But maybe it's in verse 8. The two shall become one flesh, so they're no longer two but one flesh. Is that the answer to the question? In Matthew 19, Brother Malcolm said, no, that doesn't answer that question. So we go to verse number 9. Wherefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Is that the answer to the question? When we were in Matthew 19, Brother Malcolm said, no, that doesn't answer the question. And that's all she wrote, folks. That's the end of the conversation between Jesus and the Pharisees. And Jesus goes one way, and the Pharisees go another way. And because he said that Matthew 19 and verse 9, except for fornication, that's the answer, he said, to the question. And so what we end up in Mark chapter 10 is we have a question being asked with no answer. Does that make sense to you? Does that seem reasonable that in Matthew we have a question with its answer, but in the book of Mark, all we got is the question with no answer? Does that seem reasonable? That seems unreasonable to me. Now, really, I believe that Mark does have the answer to that question. So I take you back to verse number 2. The Pharisees came and asked him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife, testing him? There's the question right there. Now, he answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? You know what Jesus is doing? He's turning the tables. And he's going to make them answer their own question. And Jesus did this several times. And that's a very effective way to teach somebody, make them answer their own question. So he turns the table. And they said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her. There's the answer that they're giving to their own question, right there. And verse 5, Jesus answered and said to them, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. Jesus is agreeing with their answer to that question. And so the answer to the question in Mark chapter 10, the answer to the question is verses 4 and 5. And since verses 4 and 5, that corresponds with Matthew chapter 19, verses 7 and 8. Okay? So when I'm in Matthew 19, the answer to the question is not verse 9. The answer to the question is verses 7 and 8. And so when I get to verse 9, this is something different. This is gospel. This is gospel law. G-O-S-P-E-L. Okay. Verse 9 is gospel law because it's different than the answer that Mark and verses 7 and 8 have. All right? Now, let's put these two chapters side by side, because when you do this, you learn a lot In Mark chapter 10, the question is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? If all you had was the book of Mark, you might think they were asking, can you even divorce? Okay? But we have more than just Mark. We've got Matthew. And Matthew helps us understand the question better. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for every cause? So now I understand that really in Mark 10, the question that's really being asked is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for every cause? That's really the question. Okay. Now, I go to verse 3. He answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? And he's turning the tables here, you see. Have them answer their own question. And I want you to notice that word command. The No Exception Brethren, they make a big deal about the word command. They say, you know, the law of Moses never commanded anybody to divorce. It was just a permission. There's the word command, and Jesus is the one using the word. Okay? Now we go to verse number 4. The Pharisee said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce. But over in Matthew 19, why did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce? Do you see that command and permit are being used interchangeably here? You cannot make an argument over the word command. Because yes, the Old Testament did permit a man to divorce his wife, but it was regulated by commands from God. So you just can't make an argument over that word command. In verse 5, Jesus answered and said to them, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this commandment, precept. That's the word entole. And over here, Moses permitted you. And again, my point is, you can't make an argument over that word command. You just can't do it. So let's take what we've learned from the book of Mark and Matthew and merge this information together, and here's what we get. In Mark 10 and verse 2, the Pharisees came and asked him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for every cause? That's the question. I know that because of Matthew 19. He answered and said to them, what did Moses command you? He's turning the question back to them. And they said, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her for every cause. They're answering their question. Their question is about every cause. And they answered that. Moses allowed us to put away our wife for every cause. Jesus agrees. He said, because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept. What precept? The precept that allows a man to divorce his wife for every cause. Every cause was permitted under Moses' law. Now, look at verse 6. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. Do you remember that one of the major arguments that these brethren make is that Jesus was asking a present tense question. He was not asking, will it be lawful to divorce in the future? He didn't ask a future tense. He asked a present tense question right now. Well, what's that? That's a past law. From the past. From the beginning. And he's referring back to some marriage and law from the past. Now let me ask you or show something to you. Jesus is here teaching something contrary to Mosaic law about marriage and divorce to the Pharisees and not just to his disciples. All right, question. Did the marriage law from the beginning contradict Moses' law? Why, sure it did. From the beginning, it was not so, Jesus said. Yes, the law in the beginning violated and contradicted Moses' law. Number two, when Jesus referred to the marriage law from the beginning, was he teaching a law which contradicted Mosaic law while Mosaic law was still in force? Yes. Number four, three, if Jesus could teach a law from the past, which contradicted Mosaic law, was he teaching people to break Mosaic law while it was in force? No. Question number four. If Jesus could teach a contradictory law from the past, could he go the other direction in time? What I mean is, could he teach a law about the future without causing someone to violate Moses' law? Yes, and that's what I believe he did do. Okay. Question number five. Did Jesus ever do this again? Did he ever clearly teach a future law about marriage while Mosaic law was in force? Now, I believe he did it here. But did he ever do it again? Clearly do it again? Oh, yeah, he did. Remember Matthew 22 and verse 30? In the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels of God in heaven. What is that? That's a future law about marriage. In fact, it is so far future, it hadn't even happened yet and won't happen until the world ends. In the resurrection, they will not be allowed to marry. That's going to be the law. Does that violate Moses' law? Why, sure it does. Moses' law, men were allowed to get married. But in the future, it will not be so. Now, when Jesus taught that, did he cause anyone to violate the law of Moses when he taught that future post-resurrection law about marriage? No. He didn't cause anybody to sin. If he could do that with the post-resurrection law of marriage, could he do it about the gospel law of marriage? Certainly he could. Certainly. All right. What was the test? You remember the Bible says the Pharisees also came to him testing him? And supposedly the test is they're watching Jesus like a hawk to see if he'll say anything that contradicts Mosaic law. What if that's not the test? What if they've got something else up their sleeve? Well, what else could it be? The NIV Study Bible has a little note that I think is worthy of your consideration. They say, the question of the Pharisees was hostile. It was for unlawful divorce and remarriage that John the Baptist denounced Herod Antipas and Herodias. And this rebuke cost him first imprisonment and then his life. Jesus was now within Herod's jurisdiction. And the Pharisees may have hoped that Jesus' reply would cause the Tetrarch to seize him as he had John. Oh, now that right there, that sounds like that's probably the trap. You see, I don't believe those Pharisees cared one hoot about the law of Moses. I think they hated Jesus. And they were thinking, if we can just get Jesus and Herod crossways with one another over the marriage like John did, then Herod will arrest Jesus and he'll kill Jesus and we'll be rid of our arch enemy. I think that's probably what's going on. They didn't care about the law. All right. Now, here's the big question. Why isn't the exception found in the epistles? If Matthew 19:9 is gospel law, why don't we read about it in any of the epistles to the churches? I believe it is mentioned. I believe it's mentioned implicitly, and I believe it's mentioned explicitly. I don't have time to go through all of that, but we'll just look at the explicit. All right? I believe the exception is mentioned explicitly. I believe it's right here. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 15. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? Shall I then take the members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? Certainly not. Do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two, he says, shall be one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. You know, people, man, they're scratching their heads over this passage. And they're thinking, well, what does this mean? You're joined to a harlot and you become one flesh. What does that mean? Does that mean if a man rents a motel room and hires a prostitute, and for one night he commits fornication, he's therefore married to the prostitute? Is that what that's saying? Oh no. This is talking about a man married to his wife, and she becomes a fornicator. She becomes unfaithful. She becomes a harlot. What is the man going to do now? Now, John Murray wrote this. I think he's on the right track. If adultery does not give ground for dissolution of the marriage bond, then a man may not secure dissolution even when his wife has abandoned herself to prostitution. This seems quite contrary to the principle of purity expressed by the apostles in 1 Corinthians 6, 15 through 17. It would appear then that the dissolution of the marriage bond must be the proper means, and in some cases the mandatory means, of securing release from a bond that binds so uniquely to one who is thus defiled. What that's saying is, when the wife becomes a harlot, a prostitute, a fornicator, the man cannot stay with her any longer. Okay? Now, verse 16, do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two, he says, shall become one flesh. Do you see the words joined and the two become one flesh? When those words are used together, describing a man and a woman, it occurs seven times in the Bible, and every single time it is talking about marriage between a man and his wife, unless this is the only exception. In Genesis 2, verse 24, the man is joined to his wife, glued to his wife, and they become one flesh. Matthew 19, 5, he's joined to his wife, and the two become one flesh. And then in 1 Corinthians 6, 16, he's joined to a harlot and becomes one flesh. In other words, when this woman becomes a harlot, she becomes a prostitute. She's sleeping around with other men. She is cheating. If that man stays with her, does he not realize that he is now joined to a harlot and that he is one flesh with her, and he can't stay in that situation? That's what he's saying. Okay. Now, look at verse 6 or verse 18. Flee fornication. Brother Jerry Cutter said this way back in about 1979. Flee fornication. That means whether we're living with a fornicator or committing the act, whatever the case may be, it is to be fled from. That's right. You cannot stay with that harlot wife. Okay? Now, every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits fornication sins against his own body. What's that mean? Every sin. This is where people start saying, well, if I get drunk, isn't that a sin against my body? If I become a drug addict, isn't that a sin against my body? This is where people start talking about suicide. Isn't that against my body? And they don't know what to think about this verse. What body is this talking about? The only body we have been talking about and reading about in this passage is in verse 16. Do you not know that he who is joined to a harlot is one body with her? For the two, he says, shall become one flesh. Now listen. Every sin, if you get drunk, that's a sin, but it is not a sin against the one flesh, one body relationship of marriage. If you become a drug addict, that's a sin, but it is not a sin against marriage. It is not a sin against the one body, one flesh relationship you have with your wife. There's only one sin that does that, and that's the sin of fornication. Now, in Ephesians 5:28, husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Listen. When you love your wife, you are loving your own flesh. You're loving your own body because you are one flesh with her. And when you commit fornication, you are sinning against your own flesh, your own wife, your own body. Brother Jerry Cutter said this, what does Paul mean? That every sin that we might ever get into is without the body except for fornication. See, except for fornication. That's right. It is against the body. What body? What body has he been talking about, my friends? What body has Paul been talking about up to this point? He's been talking about the body of marriage. That's right. Every sin is outside the body of marriage, and there's only one sin against the body of marriage, and that's fornication. And that's why Jesus, or the apostle said, shall I then take members of Christ and make them members of a harlot? Shall I force this man to stay with this unfaithful, defiled wife? God forbid. Fornication must be fled from. It is the only sin against the body of marriage. And that's why Jesus said, I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another commits adultery. That's exactly what Paul was saying in verse 18. Every sin a man does is outside the body of marriage except for fornication. There's your exception in the epistles to the churches. Okay, now there are some other problems with the no exception doctrine. There's a bunch of them, and I've got them in my booklet. I don't have time to go over all of the problems. You'll have a list that's incomplete after you get the booklet, because I've thought of more after I've written the book. Okay, but let's look at three of the problems. First, the Old Testament death penalty. Listen to me careful. The Old Testament did not ever allow divorce for fornication. Never. Is that plain enough? Never. There was never. Now, don't talk to me about the rabbinic schools and how there was two schools of rabbinic thought and one said this and another. I don't want to know about the rabbis. I want to know about the law of God. What did Moses' law say about divorce for fornication under the Old Testament? And it was never possible. Look at this. Case number one, a man has sex with an unmarried, unengaged girl. What happens? He has to marry her. And the passage explicitly says there can be no divorce all the days of his life. No divorce for fornication. None. Case number two, a man has sex with an engaged girl. What happens? She is to be put to death. No divorce for fornication. None. Case number three, premarital sex discovered in marriage. In other words, the man marries his wife and he finds out on wedding night she's not a virgin. She is put to death. No divorce for fornication. None. Case number four, extramarital sex. She's put to death. No divorce for fornication. None. Case number five, suspected extramarital sex. In this case, a special test is given, and if the woman in question is guilty, she is put to death. No divorce for fornication. She dies. No divorce for fornication. Now, the no exception doctrine does is it takes all of these passages about death and just throws them out and says Deuteronomy 24 is a case where a woman is put away for fornication. And so we've got a contradiction because all of these passages say she dies. And now Deuteronomy 24 says she lives. And there is no explanation given for this contradiction. All these passages say she dies. The other one says she lives. How do you explain this contradiction? Nobody does explain it. That's the problem with the no exception position. All right? A question about Joseph and Mary now. Doesn't Joseph divorcing Mary prove that divorce for fornication, Matthew 19:9, was Mosaic law? Doesn't that prove it? And doesn't this prove that not all engaged fornicators were put to death? Joseph and Mary. Well, here's the situation. Joseph sees that Mary is pregnant, you see. Here's the reasoning. And he knows the child's not his child. And so, you know, naturally, he suspects fornication. Of course. What other choice does he have, right? Right? Do you believe in the virgin birth? Do you believe Mary was a virgin? He does. How did you reach that conclusion? His parents told him. And you believed him? Somebody tells you and you believe it? Well, you know, it couldn't happen that way with Joseph. You know, it couldn't be. It's not possible. Joseph could have talked to Mary. Now, that's not even possible. And she couldn't have come and talked to him. And if she did, he's not going to believe a story like that. Who would believe a story like that? Except him. Listen, if he can believe in the virgin birth because somebody told him, why couldn't Joseph? Why couldn't Mary tell Joseph what was happening, and why couldn't he believe her? Well, if that's what happened, why is he wanting to divorce her then? Here's what Salmeron wrote. He said, in his modesty, Joseph thought he was unworthy of so great an honor of living with so great a virgin. He wanted to give the incarnate Word and His most holy mother their rights. That is, to pay them the honor and reverence to which they were entitled. That is why he thought of releasing Mary from her engagement. This was the thought and the motive in St. Joseph's mind. He recognized his own insignificance and his own unworthiness and contrasted them with the excellence and the eminence of his spouse, who had been made the mother of the Messiah. And so in his modesty and humility, he began to think of divorcing her, for he feared that to share a house and a home with her would be offensive to God. What was Joseph's problem? Was he enraged? My fiance has committed fornication. No, he wasn't enraged. Was he brokenhearted? Oh, my fiance has committed fornication. No, he was afraid. Do you remember the passage? While Joseph thought about these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of Mary, David, do not be afraid to take to you Mary, your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. His problem was fear. He was afraid of marrying a virgin who was going to have the Son of God. And if you would not be afraid of that, you're a fool. He was afraid, and he wanted to get out of that situation. So my point is, Joseph and Mary do not prove the Old Testament allowed divorce for fornication, because that whole argument is built on a bunch of assumptions. It can't be proven. Okay? No divorce for fornication ever under Mosaic law. All right? Here's the next, the teachings of Jesus. You see, Jesus supposedly, he cannot teach any new or different doctrine than what Moses has already said, because if he does, he will be sinning. Who made that rule up? Where'd that come from? Why, Jesus taught a lot of things new and contrary to Mosaic law. Of course he did. He's the Messiah. He's bringing a new kingdom. He taught the gospel of the kingdom. He taught that all meats will be clean and can be eaten. He taught Jerusalem will no longer be the place of worship. He taught that typical worship in the temple will no longer be valid. He taught that men must be baptized in water for salvation. He taught the members of the church how to settle their disputes in the future. He taught that men must believe in Him as the Son of God. He taught the apostles will be judges in the new kingdom. He teaches new commandments. Remember, He said, a new commandment I give unto you. And then He taught them about love. He teaches about the communion. He teaches the mysteries of the kingdom in parables. He forgives sins without requiring any animal sacrifice. Moses said, if you want forgiveness, you got to take this animal and that animal and go to the temple. Jesus just forgave their sins. And that was it. No requiring animal sacrifice. Just forgave them. And then the Great Commission. Jesus told the apostles, when you baptize people, I want you to teach them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you. He had been commanding them kingdom law, and they are now to teach it to the ones they baptize in all the nations. His teachings are my commandments and my sayings. He tells his disciples, I still have many things to say to you, indicating he's already said some things. He teaches men to pray to God in his name, and he explicitly says, you have never done this before, but now you're going to start. Okay? He teaches the spiritual nature of the kingdom to unbelieving Pilate. My kingdom is not of this world. He said his teachings are like new wine that must be put into new wineskins. They are not the old wine of the old Mosaic law, and they cannot be put in that old wineskin. Mine is new wine. It goes into new wineskin. He teaches that to be a disciple, a man must abide in my word. But if all Jesus ever did was just teach Moses' word, then to abide in Jesus' word, you're not one of Jesus' disciples, you're one of Moses' disciples. All right? He teaches blaspheming the Holy Spirit cannot be forgiven in the age to come. He says, if you keep my word, you will never see death. And he wasn't talking about Moses' law there. He says, his words will judge men in the last day. And he's not referring to Mosaic law there. And he said, men must abide in the true vine for salvation. And he's not talking about Moses' law there. And finally, when he says, whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another commits adultery, he's not talking about Moses' law there. He's talking about the gospel law. See, one more problem we'll talk about, and that is the Old Testament problem of polygamy. You see, in the Old Testament, men were allowed to have more than one wife. Matter of fact, did you know sometimes it was even required? But over here in the New Testament, Jesus said, whoever marries another commits adultery. Do you see the problem here? You see, that Old Testament man, whether he divorces the wife or keeps her, he's not committing adultery if he marries another, because the Old Testament allowed polygamy. But over here, you marry another, you're committing adultery. Matthew 19:9 will only work under a system that allows one wife at a time. That's the only way it can work. And so the no exception doctrine has the problem of polygamy to deal with. Okay. All right, in conclusion, we've looked at the arguments, some of the arguments by the no exception position, and we have seen they fall short of proving their case. We've seen that there is no proof, none, that the Mosaic law allowed divorce for fornication. There is no proof. We saw that Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 cannot be harmonized with Mosaic law. It is New Testament legislation. Paul taught this exception to the church in 1 Corinthians 6, verses 15 through 18, and he explicitly says that the Lord himself spoke of marriage and divorce between two Christians. 1 Corinthians 7, verses 10 through 11. And so when I open up my Bible and I read Matthew 19 and verse 9, I say to you that whoever divorces his wife except for fornication and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. When I read that in my Bible, I am reading New Testament legislation. So that's the end of my talk. Now I've got 1 minute. So I'm going to ask Ben Bonet and Nathan, if you would, get up here and get busy and pass out a booklet. And while they're doing that, I'd like to make the announcement that Brother Malcolm Niffen and I are going to have an open Bible study on March the 14th. That's a Saturday. It's the second Saturday of March, 6 o'clock in the evening, Seminole, Oklahoma. It's going to be at the Seminole State College. We're going to be in the Performing Arts Center. And he's going to preach 30 minutes. I'm going to preach 30 minutes. Not a debate. Just an open Bible study. He's going to present what he believes, and men in the audience are going to be allowed to ask him questions about what he said for 30 minutes. And then I'll preach 30 minutes, and the men in the audience can ask me questions for 30 minutes about what I preach. And so I'd like to invite you to make some plans and be there. We're going to have plenty of parking, plenty of restroom facilities, plenty of seating. And I want you to come, if at all possible, and be with us at that open Bible study. It'll be a great time to have a study and hear both sides of this at the very same time. So that's my little announcement. And I still have 18 seconds left, so I'll just stop.